You are listening to On the Daily, the RotoViz Daily Fantasy Sports Podcast, powered by RotoViz Radio.
Hey everyone, I'm Matt Friedman, Matt F. the Oracle of the Action Network and RotoViz. Welcome to the March 2nd, 2018 NASCAR edition of On the Daily. I'm joined by Dr. Nick Giffen, an owner of RotoViz, a PhD in mathematics, a three-time qualifier for the DraftKings NASCAR main event, and one of the best NASCAR DFS players in the world. You can follow him on Twitter at RotoDoc. Nick, how's it going?
Hey, Matt, I am doing great. Man, a lot of stuff going on in Vegas this weekend. The NASCAR race, of course, all three series are racing at Las Vegas Motor Speedway this weekend. So the Trucks, Xfinity, and the Cup Series are all racing. Also, we got the Rugby Sevens in town in Las Vegas. So I was hoping to check that out, but unfortunately, it was the same weekend as the NASCAR races. So I'm not going to be able to check out the Rugby Sevens. I am going to the Rugby World Cup in July, though, in San Francisco. So that'll be a lot of fun. And then, just a bunch going on in Vegas, and it'll be a great weekend of racing.
Yeah, I didn't know you were a rugby fan.
Yeah, I love rugby. One of my best friends who I met when I was in grad school, he went to grad school at Duke. I went to grad school at NC State. He played a lot of rugby, so he got me really into rugby. And in undergrad, I lived with three rugby players as well. So I'm definitely of the rugby persuasion, you might say.
Of the rugby persuasion.
It's like curling, except, you know, it's not. It's just like a niche sport that I enjoy.
Yeah. When you were living with the rugby players, did you find that they partied harder than, you know, like other athletes?
Yeah. So there was a rugby house at James Madison University, and they always threw the craziest parties. The three rugby players I lived were, I guess, on the calmer side, and we didn't host any rugby parties, thankfully, but the rugby parties were certainly insane.
Yes, hashtag rugby life. Okay, let's launch into the show. So earlier this week, we previewed this weekend's NASCAR Cup race at Las Vegas Motor Speedway, so be sure to check out that midweek podcast. We talk about a lot of things, specifically the statistics that have proven most predictive for this race, so definitely check out the midweek pod. Nick. As we're recording this, qualifying has just recently ended, so we are here to break down the slate in more depth. What are your instant reactions given qualifying and what we saw in early practice?
Yeah, my instant reaction is I don't know what the hell Brad Keselowski was complaining about at the end of last year, where the Fords were going to be at a disadvantage because they seemed to be the manufactured beat. They were the manufactured beat at Daytona. Looked like they were the best manufacturer this past weekend at Atlanta. And so far at Vegas, they look like the manufacturer to beat as well. So, Brad Keselowski, just because you guys didn't get a new car doesn't mean you guys can't have the fastest cars. So quit your bitching.
That's it? I thought there was going to be so much more after that. That's
my instant reaction, man. Fords are pretty good. So,
I mean, full disclosure, I had you on. I had my microphone muted, and I was racing to my bookie to bet on Fords this weekend while you were.
So that's probably not a bad bet. I think when they opened, I think they were actually. I don't know if you have the lines open now, but I think when they opened, they were the longest odds. They were behind Toyota and Chevy, which I thought was kind of strange.
Yeah, there's been some interesting lines on manufacturers. I'm sure that will start to get straightened out as the season progresses. But so something that people might want to check out there. All right, you talked about Fords looking like the dominant manufacturers. How are the Chevys faring after the struggles at Atlanta?
Yeah, I mean, definitely at Atlanta, we saw how much the Chevys struggled. Chase Elliott was able to work his way into the top 10 with a little bit of strategy, but it wasn't a great showing for Chevy this weekend at Vegas. If you look at just the practice times, it looks like they might be okay, given Kyle Larson was first, William Byron was fifth, Chase Elliott was ninth. But you kind of start to scroll down and you see most of the Chevys are all the way there in the middle or back half of the field. You got, you know, Newman only practiced 17th after he practiced, you know, second or first last week. Jimmy Johnson 19th, Alex Bowman 21st. These are, you know, Johnson and Bowman are Hendrick guys there, and they didn't have super fast practices. Chris Buescher, Casey Kane, Darrell Walls Jr., Austin Dillon, A.J. Allmendinger, Ty Dillon all practiced between 23rd and 29th. So they still seem to be struggling. And then you flip over to qualifying as well, and you only got two Chevys making the final round of qualifying, those being the same two Chevys that were fastest in last weekend's Atlanta race, Kyle Larson and Chase Elliott. So they seem to be kind of carrying the torch for the Chevys, but the Chevys really do seem to be behind still. So, a little bit of tough sledding in the early going for the new Camaro.
Okay, let's talk a little bit about Martin Truex Jr. He won the race last year. He had the 11th fastest time in opening practice. He qualified fourth, and he was one of the drivers that you highlighted earlier in the week as someone to watch. What are your thoughts about him now?
Yeah, I think because the Fords look like they are the dominant manufacturer, I think you do downgrade Truex a little bit compared to what we would, normally expect from him, I guess. He's a driver that I think really we need him to dominate if he's qualifying fourth. We need him to dominate a portion of the race to be worth playing. So he's $10,500 in salary. And if he doesn't have a period of dominance in this race, he's not going to be worth it. And he's got three Fords starting in front of him. So it'll be tough to overcome them if these Fords are actually better than the Toyotas. So we still want to check out the final two practices. We have two practices on Sunday at Las Vegas. So we'll check out the single lap and especially the 10 lap averages. The single lap doesn't actually even show up in the model as a significant factor. So check out 10 lap averages in final practice. And we'll see if Truex has gained any ground on the Toyotas have gained any ground on the Fords. But right now, I might actually downgrade him a little bit at his current salary of $10,500. If he doesn't dominate, he's probably not worth playing. So we'll have to see how final practice shakes out. Doesn't mean, if you're multi-entering, you should have no Truex. You should definitely still have some Truex exposure. I just think it might be a little we're so early in the season and the model is really reliant on last year's data, track type data, and then overall data that Truex may be a little overinflated by the model just because right now the Fords are probably, being, I guess, a little underrated by the model. And if they perform better, it really should knock Truex down a little bit. So we'll have to see. But my gut instinct early on says Truex might be too highly owned relative to his potential for dominance, but we'll see.
I have a question about the Chevys. How long do you think into the season, I guess two things, how long do you think it will take the general market, so DraftKings setting the salaries, Vegas setting lines, how long do you think it will take the market to adjust to the Chevys being not quite as good as they were last year, and then how long do you think it will also take the Chevys and the teams working on the cars to improve the cars?
Yeah, that's a really good question. My first feeling on the market is, I think they should, after this race, if the Chevys are still struggling, they should be adjusting for that. Whether they will or not, we will see. Next weekend's race is going to be at Phoenix, which is a one-mile track, a little bit different. So we'll actually also have to see how Chevys perform in a different situation at a one-mile track where top speed isn't as important and aerodynamics maybe aren't as important, but mechanical grip is more important. We'll have to see, do the Chevys have a disadvantage there as well? Maybe they should be adjusting already, but it's kind of hard to say because we haven't tested some of these other tracks, the mile oval at Phoenix. After that, we'll go to the 2 mile oval, at Auto Club Speedway, which is also a Ty Higher Wear track, kind of like Atlanta was. So I think after Phoenix, we really should have, everything should be adjusted in my opinion. Whether the markets will, I don't know, but I think they should. When will Chevy catch up to Ford and Toyota? That probably could take a third or a halfway into the season. We saw last year with the Toyotas, they struggled in the first third of the season. Struggled's a relative term. I mean, Martin Truex Jr. still won the race at Las Vegas, but I think that was their only win in the first 10 races of the season until they started reeling off a bunch of wins later in the season as they improved their Camry because they introduced a new model of the Camry last year, like Chevy's introducing a new model of the Camaro. Toyota was able to redo their bodies last year and made some gains partway through the season. So I think if we don't see Chevy starting to improve after about a third of the season, we could be really concerned for the rest of the season as well.
It's interesting. Let's talk about Kyle Busch. So he qualified 13th, but he was the fourth fastest in opening practice. And he was one of the drivers you highlighted in the midweek show. What is your take on him right now?
Yeah, so again, we got another Toyota driver here, Kyle Busch, and this is his home track. He's from Las Vegas, so he always wants to win here. He has performed well here in the past, but he did qualify 13th. That is an interesting starting spot for him because he should move forward through the field, should pass some of these guys in front of him. The question is, will he make it far enough forward? Will he lead some laps? Will he get enough fastest laps to end up in the winning lineup? There's a very good chance of that happening. You know, I think just through the way races have many different possibilities of playing out. So I do like using Kyle Busch at this point in the weekend. You mentioned fourth fastest in opening practice. If he shows that kind of speed over a long run in practice two and practice three, definitely, I think Kyle Busch would be a driver worth playing, even though he's not in a Ford. I mean, you can't just only stick Fords in your lineups all the time. Obviously, last weekend, the winning lineup didn't just have all Fords. So I think it's pretty neat that we've got this manufacturer thing going and kind of these big names, Martin Truex Jr. and Kyle Busch. We think about, like, maybe do we downgrade them because they aren't in the best car right now or the best manufacturer right now. Well, in Truex's case, because of where he's starting and the probability of dominance and having fewer place differential potential, I think it's a downgrade a bit for him. With Kyle Busch, I don't think it's as much of a downgrade for him because he starts 13th. So there's still 12 place differential potential spots for him if he were to win the race. And if he does win the race, obviously he's going to be leading at least one lap, probably a lot more. So I do like Kyle Busch a lot still this weekend.
Okay, so many more drivers to get to, but before that, I want to remind everyone that you can get a 30% discount to a special NASCAR pass through our NASCAR podcast homepage, rotoviz.com/NASCAR podcast. With that pass, you get unlimited access to all of Nick's premium NASCAR content, and your subscription supports the pod. Also, remember that Nick is going to be writing a betting article breaking down the odds to win at the Action Network. I will also have an article this weekend looking at head-to-head props, so be sure to check those out. Nick, continuing. One name you talked about was Jimmy Johnson. Seven-time Cup champion, specifically mentioned the idea of maybe avoiding him. He qualified 14th. Is he still someone that you were thinking about fading?
Actually, yes. I think he's a driver I am thinking about fading. 14th is kind of an awkward position because you're not far enough forward to be really considered a dominator. You're not starting back in the 20s. Now, there's still plenty of place differential potential with Johnson, but you know, what is realistically is he going to do in this race if the Chevys are behind, if he's behind? I mean, his opening practice speed wasn't very quick. It was only 19th quickest. And so if he's continuing to struggle, you know, and he also has kind of struggled at this track type over the past half season or full season, even these mile and a halfs, I think Jimmy Johnson is probably a driver we should be avoiding still, even in this 14th qualifying position, because it's not enough. Far enough back for me to say, well, you can go from 24th to 8th, but 14th to 8th really isn't anything. I mean, I guess not nothing, but it's not probably not a winning lineup type thing without some extra fastest laps. The one saving grace, of course, is his salary is $8,900, which puts him at the bottom tier of kind of like this top tier of drivers, because after him, there is a $400 gap. Well, there's a $200 gap to Blaney and then another $200 gap to Kurt Busch and then another $200 gap to Eric Jones. But I mean, really kind of you're considering Jimmy Johnson as the lowest priced driver of these top tier drivers. So there's some value there, but he's probably a driver I will have, I wouldn't say a lot of this weekend. Now I'll have to see what the model thinks, what the market thinks, how he practices. But if he's somehow the model projects him to be 10 or 15% owned, maybe it's not a bad idea to go overweight on him. But if, you know, the model projection be 20% owned or something like that, then I don't mind being a little bit underweight on Jimmy Johnson.
Okay, earlier in the week, you talked about the trio of Jamie McMurray, Kurt Busch, Eric Jones. You mentioned that they have similar track type history and they are in similar price ranges. How are you ordering them right now, given what we've seen in opening practice and qualifying?
Yeah, it's interesting because I guess there's two kinds of ordering. One, how do we expect them to perform in the race? But two, for DraftKings purposes, how do we expect them to do on DraftKings? Because how you perform in the race obviously is very different than how you perform in DraftKings. A lot of it just based off the fact that you may qualify in different positions. So Jamie McMurray actually is a pretty nice discount, and he starts 22nd to the other couple drivers there, Kurt Busch and Eric Jones. But he is in that Chevy, which seems to be a bit slower. We do know his teammate Kyle Larson is capable of putting top 10 times. And Jamie McMurray actually has the best track type history of the three drivers here, Jamie McMurray, Kurt Busch, and Eric Jones. So in terms of performance, I expect him to be third of these three drivers. But in DraftKings, I think he's probably the best pick if he maxes out his potential here, going from 22nd starting position to maybe a top 12 finish. I mean, a 12th place finish would be 10 place differential points plus 32 finishing position points. That's 42 points there at $7,400 is very nice. Then you've got Kurt Busch and Eric Jones, who are in the Toyota and the Ford, sorry, the Ford and the Toyota respectively for Kurt Busch and Eric Jones. So Kurt Busch and that Ford qualified third. It's going to be tough for him to, I guess, dominate when you've got, Ryan Blaney starting first. You've got Kevin Harvick starting second. You've got Martin Truex Jr. starting fourth. Kurt Busch is in a situation where I think he may perform the best just because he's in that Ford and he has a very similar track type history to Eric Jones. A lot more experienced home track for him as well, being Kyle Busch's brother, older brother. They're both from Vegas. So I expect him to perform the best, but for DraftKings, I think Eric Jones is the better play just because he starts ninth instead of third and has the chance to come forward a little bit more than Kurt Busch. I don't foresee either of them necessarily dominating. It's not impossible that either of them has a period where they dominate in the race, but I give them probably equal probabilities. And in that case, I would take the guy starting a little bit further back, even though he is in that Toyota, which is probably a little inferior to the Ford. I just like that little added place differential. They're basically the same price, $85 and $8,300 for Busch and Jones, respectively. So the kind of the way I prefer these three drivers in DraftKings is the opposite of how I expect them to perform in the race.
Okay, are there any drivers whose performances either in qualifying or in practice have kind of surprised you in relation to their track type history?
Yeah, I'm just guessing to keep harping on this guy all year. It's my boy Paul Menard. Practiced third in opening practice, and then in qualifying, he made the final round of qualifying. Qualified 12th in the final round of qualifying, so he was the last car of those 12. But he actually was first in the opening round of qualifying. He posted the fastest qualifying speed in the opening round. So there is a lot of speed in that Wood Brothers car. Obviously, they're a Penske affiliate. So we do know he is in much better equipment than he was in last year. And he really hasn't been price adjusted on DraftKings, whereas Eric Almirola has been price adjusted up to $7,700. Menard's still sitting down there at $6,900 on DraftKings. A 12th place starting position is a little awkward, but if he starts 12th and finishes 8th, I know it's only 4 place differential, but it's 4 place differential at $6,900. Versus, Jimmy Johnson, if he starts 14th and finishes 8th, that's 6th place differential, but it's all the way up at $8,900, a $2,000 difference between the two. And I actually think Menard has the better car than Johnson does this weekend. And given Johnson's track history, or I should say track type history recently at the large ovals, hasn't been that great. I mean, it's better than Menard's. If you look at Jimmy Johnson's last 8 large oval races, he has an 81.8 driver rating, whereas Paul Menard, much further down at 61.4. Menard doesn't have great track type history, but he was also in that inferior Richard Childress Racing equipment last year. Ryan Newman was also in that Richard Childress Racing equipment last year. His last 8 large oval races were 62.3. And then you've got Austin Dillon, who was up at 77.1. So he seems to be the best of those drivers last year at RCR. But this is a big equipment upgrade for Paul Menard. Great in practice, good qualifying. We'll see how he does in the final couple practice sessions. But $6,900 is a steal for a guy who has top 10 potential just because he has a great car. One other name that I guess surprised me for the positive was William Byron did qualify fifth, or not qualify, he practiced fifth, I should say, in opening practice. His qualifying was 17th, so rookie William Byron in the 24 car for Hendrick Motorsports. It is a Chevy, so we'll have to, of course, maybe say there's a little bit of a manufacturer disadvantage there at this point in the season, but if he does end up practicing a lot better than his 17th place qualifying position, right? So if his 10 lap averages are top 12 or something like that, this is another driver that I think would be interesting to have in some lineups in that 17th place starting position.
Okay, so you mentioned there are two guys who I guess have outperformed your expectations relative to their track type history. Any drivers who have disappointed or underperformed relative to what you thought they would?
I mean, I guess Trevor Bayne last year on the large ovals was pretty good, especially in the first half of the season. He was really good at the large ovals. The second half, he only had the 22nd best driver rating. But if we go back to all of last year and look at driver rating, Trevor Bayne's driver rating was actually much higher earlier in the season. So, he hasn't been very good this weekend. He's in the Ford, which should be an advantage, but he practiced 30th in opening practice, only qualified 24th, was outqualified by, David Ragan, for example, who qualified 23rd. And we usually think of David Ragan as somebody who straddles the Joe Dirt cheap tier there. Reagan $5,900 this weekend, Trevor Bayne $6,300. So not super enthused about Trevor Bayne this weekend, especially, if he's qualified 30th around where he practiced, maybe I'd feel a little bit better, but he's qualified 24th, and I really don't see him having much better than a top 24 car.
Okay, let's talk about dominators. Who are the top candidates right now before we see the second practice? Top candidates to dominate the race. What are your
I'm gonna have
thoughts?
to go. Yeah, I'm gonna have to go number one with Ryan Blaney over Kevin Harvick. We've seen how good Blaney has been this year, obviously, especially at Daytona, which is a bit of a different beast. But performed okay at Atlanta. Didn't perform great, but this is a very different mile and a half than Atlanta. And if we look at the large ovals last year, Ryan Blaney did very well at them. If we strictly look, for example, at driver rating, he had the sixth best driver rating last year in the last eight large oval races. So he's a driver who led 9.6% of the laps on average over those last eight large oval races, which is like kind of the perfect sample size that I like to look at for Las Vegas. So Ryan Blaney, I think, is my number one dominator. Kevin Harvick will be my number two dominator. So kind of just going right there in the order of qualifying, one Blaney, two Harvick. Harvick, 108.7 driver rating last year. 8.7%, I should say, at the large ovals of those last eight races, 8.7% of the laps led in those last eight large oval races versus Blaney's 9.6. So those two Fords right there, one and two, will be the ones I give it to. And then third would be Martin Truex Jr., starting fourth. He was the large oval king last year, just an absolute beast. So I definitely have to give Martin Truex Jr. the edge there. I think he'll be my third best dominator there. And I misspoke with Ryan Blaney. In terms of the laps led, I had the filter wrong on the Rotoviz Splits app, so make sure you don't have the filter wrong. He did not lead 9% of the laps in the last eight large oval races, but he did have a nice driver rating of 91.7, which is good for seventh best instead of sixth best.
Okay. Other drivers above 8,500, who do you like?
So this is an interesting weekend just because most of these drivers who are 8,500 and above qualified very far forward. One driver who did not is Denny Hamlin there in 19th place qualifying position. It's crazy because last year he made the top 12, I think it seemed like every weekend in qualifying. And so this time he's 19th. If we look at, large oval history for Denny Hamlin, it's not quite as good as, Martin Truex Jr., Kevin Harvick, but that's the top tier. Right after that, it's Kyle Busch and then Denny Hamlin over the last eight large oval races. So Denny Hamlin, the fourth best driver rating at the large ovals over the last eight. That means that 19th place qualifying position, very appealing for Denny Hamlin. I would be hammering him this weekend if I was playing, but of course I'm going to be at the race, and so I'm not going to take away from my enjoyment there to set lineups. So, but I would be hammering Denny Hamlin this weekend, and we'll see in practice as well. But I suspect he'll be pretty quick in practice. If we look at his opening practice time, Denny Hamlin was 10th best, but of course that's really he only did five laps. Was probably a qualifying trim lap, and we also saw that, obviously he didn't qualify super great, so we'll have to see how he does in practice. But I really like the track type history for Denny Hamlin as a driver who sits there up in the higher price range. One other name, Joey Logano, qualified 10th. Obviously, he struggled in the second half of last year, so it's going to be a little bit different with him with the track type history because it's obviously going to give him a much bigger knock. So I think the model could be a little bit lower on him. But hopefully, that Joey Logano and the Penske's and the Fords in general have recovered, and he is kind of in the lower half of that price tier, of 8,500 and above. He's at 9,300, whereas somebody like Chase Elliott is 96 or Kyle Larson is 98 in those Chevys there. Joey Logano, I think, has the manufacturer advantage relative to those two, and a little bit of a price discount.
Okay, let's talk about the guys who are in that middle range, say 7,000 to 8,500. Who is intriguing you in cash games and or GPPs?
Yeah, well, I think in cash games, certainly I talked about Jamie McMurray at 7,400 as a possibility. We'll have to see how things shake out after final practice. Ryan Newman in 25th place qualifying at 7,100 at the bottom part of that price range is a possibility. So those are a couple names right there that I don't mind for possible cash game consideration. We'll have to see how they do in final practice and what the model thinks of them and everything like that. But Jamie McMurray and Ryan Newman in the Chevys there. If you want to go away from the Chevys, obviously Eric Almirola qualified 29th. He'll be a popular play. He could also very well end up in a lot of cash game lineups and probably should. The large ovals weren't Eric Almirola's strength last year. He had a 67 driver rating over the last eight large ovals, which isn't great. It puts him 20th of all the drivers, but he did qualify 29th and he gets an equipment upgrade versus what he was in last year. So he probably will be like a top 15, maybe 16 driver. We'll have to see how final practice goes, but I would suspect that Eric Almirola will have a much better car there. So a lot of names in this 7K range. I mean, I mentioned William Byron was a pleasant surprise and he starts 17th. He could go underlooked. Daniel Suarez starts 18th. He could go underlooked. These are two names that I think could be under-owned in GPPs, and one of these two could end up possibly in the winning GPP lineup would be like a Daniel Suarez or a William Byron.
Okay, the sort of quote-unquote value tier, the drivers 6,000 to 7,000, who's standing out right now?
Yeah, I mean, in terms of performance, Paul Menard stands out at 6,900 as we talked about. But in terms of DraftKings possibilities as well, Ty Dillon qualified 31st. He's at $6,500. So it pretty much seems like he will be moving forward. Obviously, they did struggle this weekend. The Chevys have struggled. Ty Dillon only practiced 29th. But I guess 29th is better than 31st. And so, kind of a tough tier here in this 6 to 7K range in terms of drivers we expect to move forward. There's a lot of these Chevy names in here that we talked about. AJ Allmendinger in that Chevy, Ty Dillon, Chevy, Darrell Wallace Jr., Chevy, Kasey Kahne, Chevy. So, and they're all starting in this mid-20 range. So it's a range that I think is probably one we're avoiding. But AJ Allmendinger did qualify the furthest back of these as well, besides Ty Dillon in 27th. So maybe you can play AJ Allmendinger as well. But really a tough tier of drivers in this 6 to 7K range. But I wouldn't be surprised to see one driver from this range end up in the winning lineup as well. It's not out of the question, of course. And if it does happen, it's probably going to be either, my guess would be Ty Dillon or AJ Allmendinger. And then obviously Paul Menard starting up there in 12th at 6,900. If he does move forward, he should be in the winning lineup as well if he finishes, in the top 10.
Okay, finally, are there any Joe Dirt cheap drivers that you like this weekend?
Yes, there's one super obvious name. I don't know why he is priced this low. Chris Buescher is $5,700. I don't understand the pricing there on Chris Buescher. He did only have the 25th best large oval driver rating in the last eight large oval races, but that's okay. I mean, he's in above the Joe Dirt cheap tier in terms of large oval driver rating. If you look at the drivers that were behind him, so I said Chris Buescher was 25th. Then you go down there. 26th was AJ Allmendinger, 27th was McDowell, 28th was Ty Dillon, 29th was David Reagan, 30th was Matthew Benedetto. So, like, he's ahead of all these drivers, but he's priced down there either at or below some of these drivers as well, and is better at the large ovals, has probably a little bit better equipment than guys like McDowell or DiBenedetto or Reagan. So I think Chris Buescher, a very nice name at $2,800, not 28, 28th starting position, $5,700 on DraftKings. Outside of that, we'll have to see how practice goes. We do have 37 cars in the race. Some drivers were exceptionally super slow in opening practice. Joey Gase was very, very, very slow. He was 1.2 seconds slower than Jeffrey Earnhardt ahead of him. Jeffrey Earnhardt still was pretty slow at 30.9 seconds for a lap. Greg Gaulding, 30.6. Ross Chastain, 36.6 as well, and then Cole Whitt at 30.3. All of those drivers were a full second slower than Matthew Benedetto, who practiced in 32nd. And if you look at qualifying as well, DiBenedetto did qualify 22nd. All those other drivers qualified behind him. So that does seem to be a pretty good ordering of speed. So if you really, really want to dig down into that range, I guess Cole Whitt in 34th and Ross Chastain in 33rd, maybe flip of what could have happened last week, where I said Ross Chastain over Cole Whitt because Chastain started one spot further back. This time Cole Whitt starts one spot further back. So he's probably the better play, but I wouldn't be surprised if Chastain just stayed ahead of Cole Whitt and ended up in the winning lineup like Cole Whitt did last week in the flip scenario where he started ahead of Chastain and finished one spot ahead of Ross Chastain. We might see the flip scenario this week.
Okay, Nick, you mentioned earlier that you were actually going to be at the race, which is going to be very exciting. How is that going to impact the content schedule for everything with the Las Vegas race?
Yeah, so we talked a bit about it on the midweek pod in terms of what it will be, but we hadn't officially finalized when RotoViz Live will be. So right after practice ends, I will be updating the model. I will update not only the projection model for points, but also the ownership model, throw those into my article, get the article published. That's usually my first step after any final practice weekend. Where we have a normal practice schedule and qualifying schedule weekend. That's my process right after final practice, update the model, update the ownership model, get the article out. That's number one priority. So I do that. Then I update the apps. So the optimizer will get updated with the model projections. The NASCAR splits app will be updated. The sim scores will be updated because we'll have practice times and qualifying positions, and those are part of the sim scores that we calculate as well. And then from there, once everything is updated on RotoViz, I will have a little bit of time to figure out if I want to do the betting article right then on Action Network that I'll be submitting to you guys at Action Network. Or if I want to do it after RotoViz Live, because you guys voted RotoViz Live to be at 9:30 p.m. Eastern time, 6:30 p.m. Pacific time. That was what won the Twitter poll, over 100 voters. So thank you guys a lot for voting in that poll. So RotoViz Live will be 9:30 p.m. Eastern, 6:30 p.m. Pacific. And if betting lines and everything like that are updated enough in time before RotoViz Live, I'll do the betting article then. Otherwise, I'll do it right after RotoViz Live. So in that case, it would probably be out pretty late on Saturday night or Sunday morning whenever you guys get it edited and out. But if the lines are out enough in time and I do it before RotoViz Live, I assume the betting article will probably be run Saturday afternoon, evening, something like that.
I can't remember. Did you go to the Las Vegas race last year?
I did, and it's crazy because it was so hot last year. I mean, it was like in the low 80s or something like that. But when the sun is just beating down on you and you're sitting in those stands, it was really, really hot. There was not much of a breeze, so it didn't help any. Normally Las Vegans don't complain about 80 degrees, but when you're sitting there with no breeze, it can get a little bit overwhelming, even at 80 something degrees. This year, it's supposed to be only like 58 for the high. It's going to be sunny again and maybe about a 5 to 10 mile an hour wind, so light and variable or whatever they call it. But it'll be much colder this year than last year.
Yeah. When I ask you this question next year, you're going to be like, oh, it was so cold last year. It was unbearable.
Well, the good thing is we get two races in Vegas this year, so I'll get to do it again in the fall.
Oh, that's true. That's true. So you can get screwed on both ends of it. You'll be cold here and then hot there. So
yeah, it'll probably be like 120 for the next race or something.
Okay. That is going to do it for this NASCAR edition of On the Daily. For Nick Giffen on Twitter at RotoDoc, I'm Matt Friedman, Matt F. The Oracle. Thanks for tuning in. Thank you for listening to On the Daily, the RotoViz Daily Fantasy Sports Podcast, powered by RotoViz Radio. And special thanks to Randy E. Aguabo for the introduction. Please review the podcast on iTunes under the established RotoViz Radio feed. Contact us via email onthedailydfs@gmail.com and follow us on Twitter @onthedailydfs.